Hey everyone, this is Jacob Tender, and this is episode 0 of my new podcast. This week the show is sponsored by Epitaph Records. The fine folks at Epitaph are ushering in the return of Seosin with original vocalist Anthony Green. The record is called Along the Shadow and is available now on shelves and on iTunes. For a limited time, you can order Along the Shadow on Merch Direct and save 15% on your order by using promo code VBRPOD at checkout. Thank you, Epitaph Records, for supporting our show. This week, I'm joined by... How do you pronounce your last name, man?
Baisley.
Baisley. Okay. It was either Baisley or Baisley, but I thought Baisley sounded more right with the A and the... What are you actually doing? You're not doing AP anymore, right?
Yeah, I'm done with AP now. I've been done there for a while. I've been doing Under the Gun, and that's mainly it.
What about, don't you have a record label?
I do the record label too. Yeah, Why Bother Records. And Full Frequency Media is the personal blog, and that's been kind of on hiatus this year while I sort through that a little bit.
Do you own Why Bother?
Yes. I run it with my good friend who I've been through high school and everything. He's like my best friend, Christian. We do that all together. We actually made our first profit yesterday after 13 months.
Wow, nice.
So it's, yeah, finally. But made, yeah. So, yeah, we're doing pretty well. Got big plans. But, yeah, that's our co-owned thing right now.
How'd you come about like doing that? Was there a specific project that you had in mind that you wanted to release?
Yeah, well, actually, I can pinpoint that like to an exact moment. Was I was talking to my friend Emily, who does social media and a few other like business type things for the band A Will Away, who are on Triple Crown now. This was about like 2 years ago. They were playing shows around New Jersey a lot, and you know we had kind of become friends with them. And I remember having this one conversation with her about like we were so like amazed that they weren't signed. Basically, I was just frustrated that there were so many local bands that I felt had a lot of talent that, you know, no one in terms of like booking or management or labels were noticing at all. I remember that exact conversation though, and I kind of remember thinking like, I wish I could like run a record label just so I could sign this band. And then I kind of thought like, well, why can't I do that? You know, I mean, it'll probably cost money, but that's, you know, that's probably it. Like, why can't I do it? So I just, you know, maybe like 8-10 months later, we finally got everything off the ground. I had, you know, Christian is really, really good with like math and computer science and stuff. And I am more in the music industry, I guess. So I think we both, the two sides of that, we run the business pretty well. And yeah, so we've done 5 releases. I think we have a 6th coming out later this summer.
Wow, that's awesome. That's really cool. It's kind of a daunting idea starting up a record label like that, you know?
Definitely.
Are you pressing vinyl?
Not pressing vinyl yet. We have talked a little bit about doing it this fall, or we're starting to make moves with that now.
Okay.
That's something I'm like kind of afraid of just because it is a lot of money and a lot of time right now. Like especially the plants are so overwhelmed that you have to know what you're doing well in advance, and that timing for us has been kind of something we've been trying to figure out the most. But in terms of like figuring out how to do it, that's, you know, we just did that ourselves. Like the first release we made, I spent like almost all the money I had like on it, the two of us. We both put in a decent amount of money. We got like 100 CDs and like 75 tapes, and we put everything on like Spotify and everything through TuneCore. And we spent a lot of money and had like no return on it, basically, because the band we released the EP of, they toured that summer and they had like 3 van breakdowns, and they didn't make any money and everything. So we kind of just didn't get the investment back. So with everything we've done, we've kind of just said, okay, well, you know what, maybe we shouldn't do CDs for this one, or maybe we shouldn't do 75 tapes. How about we do 25 and see where that goes, you know? So we've gotten to a point now where we can do everything pretty inexpensively and everything. That's why we've finally broken even on something. But if I've ever had any questions about anything, I can go to Mark Garza. Knows quite a bit about making tapes from doing funeral sounds, which is impressive because Mark's like 17 or 18 now. And like years younger than me, but knows way more than I do about any of this.
Mark's an incredible human.
Yeah, Mark is insane. Yeah, I have no idea how they can do all that stuff and not, I mean, you know, when I was in high school and I was like 15 and 16, I was like just listening to Pierce the Veil and like getting detention. I wasn't like, you know, doing anything special or important. Did you see those? I don't mean to like just plug Mark Garza stuff, but did you see the Funeral Sounds tapes? They're doing Between Bodies by The World's a Beautiful Place.
What?
And it's all on like, yeah, well, that's insane, right? But it's all like on clear stuff. Like it's like completely clear tapes, and like the J card itself, like the insert is clear and the case is clear. And it's just like, it looks really cool. It's like one of the coolest looking tapes I've seen. And, you know, the fact that Mark is like, the fact that I know Mark and Mark is so young is just, that makes it even more impressive.
I'm looking at it now. This looks amazing.
That is like, that's the cool thing about cassettes right now is like no one is buying tape because it sounds better or even sounds like cooler. In fact, it sounds like considerably worse. Like if you can get like a cool collector's item type limited run, something special like that, that, you know, that's the special part about tapes.
Yeah, I have tons. I mean, I have almost the entire antique records collection of tapes. I got like some Runaway Brother tapes that I got from James as well. So just a huge slew of tapes here that I will never listen to. I don't, but you're right. It's that kind of like collector's mentality where this is cool. You know, this is different. And I want this because I know at some point somebody's going to want to buy this from me on Discogs for like three times what I actually paid for it.
Yeah, exactly. I have quite a few now as well. And, I've actually gotten into making mixtapes for people too. You know, I've read quite a bit about, from Rob Sheffield. I don't know if you're familiar with him, but he has a book called Love is a Mixtape and a few others that are, they kind of, you know, focus on the idea of making mixtapes for people and how that plays into like developmental stuff, like, you know, getting married and whatnot. So I started making a bunch of just, you know, homemade mixtapes too, which kind of impresses people a lot of the time. So I have a fat stack here.
I started editing a book for... Are you friends with James Kasser?
Yeah, I am. I love James.
Is it Kasser or Kassar?
I think it's Kassar.
Kassar?
Yeah.
Go with that.
He's a nice guy. I love James.
Me too. He really is. He's a sweetie pie. But I started editing a book for him, and he takes a lot of influence from Rob Sheffield.
Yeah, I can definitely see that with his, you know, from what I've read from his. I think it's a very similar style.
Yeah, I think he's met him a couple times. He's like a huge nut for that guy.
Yeah, yeah. I didn't know that, but I totally believe it.
So tell me about your history in writing, because you're writing for Under the Gun. You've done some work for Alternative Press in the past. Where did you get started?
Well, I started when I was kind of young, when I was like 17, in my senior year of high school. I started a Tumblr, that's Full Frequency Media. It was Full Frequency Collective at that point, hence the email. And I just kind of was posting news, like Manchester Orchestra puts out a new song, I would post like a news story about it, just because I felt like being a part of that conversation, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And then over that summer after I graduated, I kind of decided like, you know what, like I'm gonna try and put a little effort into this. I didn't really want to make it like a thing. I just kind of wanted it to be something I could do mainly for myself, and just have something to show, I guess, you know. Like, yeah, I run a blog. Not, I didn't want that to be like my career or anything.
Right.
I started, you know, writing about, you know, reviews of this and that, local bands, just albums I really liked. And then somewhere around probably like late in September or October of my freshman year of college, I just, you know, I didn't really love college that much. Like I was spending weekends alone, and I wasn't making friends that much, so I kind of just started doing that more and more and tried to make that a thing. And then I remember probably either the beginning of October or the end of September of that year, Property of Zach actually looked for staff members. Like they had like a whole post up, and I was like, you know what, like I'm going to apply. Why not? So I applied and like didn't think like, okay, like... Again, I was kind of like really far in the back of my mind, but I got an email back basically saying like, hey, this is like, you know, like these are good writing samples. Like we're not looking for anyone right now, but thanks. And I was like, okay, well, that's cool. And like getting that email back, in addition to kind of making like one of the friends I made up at school was this kid named Ryan who wrote for, at that time it was called easycore.net. It was just like a... Yeah, it was like, you know, some like pop punk blog, but I thought that was the coolest thing, you know? So I was like, you know what, I'm going to apply around a little bit. And I, the next day I applied to Under the Gun, and then Brian got back to me, and I've been there since. Brian said he would hire me as an intern, like on an internship basis, because I had no experience. And so, yeah, I've been doing it since then. I did news for a while, and then my first review was an Our Last Night album.
Nice.
Then I did an Against Me album, and yep.
That's cool.
I've been with Under the Gun since, and I did...
And this is when?
Alternative Press last year. That was 2013, the fall of 2013. So coming up on 3 years, which is kind of weird.
Yeah, right. Yeah, I've been doing Under the Gun since 2011. Time flies, man.
Jeez, yeah. That's you're 23, right?
I am.
Well, you know, I remember that because when you turned 21, you posted a blog post on your website that I remember reading and enjoying a lot. It was called like I'm No Longer Impressive or something.
Oh, that man, that was back when I was writing on Medium. That's when Medium first dropped and I thought it was the coolest thing.
Oh yeah, I loved Medium a lot, but I never really got into it. But yeah, I remember reading that when you turned 21, and that kind of stuck with me. And it, I thought of it recently because I turned 21 in March. So
it's a weird time, man. It's weird.
Yeah, it was really strange. I don't know. I have a lot of feelings on that, but
dissect that, man. Like, oh, I haven't really been able to talk about that with anybody for quite a while. Like, it's a weird time because, like, you know, you when you start as young as you and I did, you know, I started blogging around the same time. I was 16 or 17, and I was still 17 when I came on as co-owner of Under the Gun. So, you know, when you start doing these things that young, and most of it is, you know, online, you're talking to people online, you're conducting interviews and doing emails and all that kind of stuff, people don't really realize how young you are.
Yeah. Exactly. I think like the thought that I had on it was, you know, like this time last year, again, I did feel like, you know, I remember like I don't think Brian, like when he hired me, thought I was like capable of doing the job, you know, like if I like go back and like read those emails, he kind of says like, yeah, like, you know, well, you don't have experience and you're pretty young, like you're younger than most of our staff. And, you know, I got I kind of got that a little bit.
Yeah.
So I remember like thinking like, okay, well, if I write well, then like I'll be super impressive, you know, like, and that's, I you know, that's kind of been my thing for a while. Like, I remember, I actually met Mark Garza before Under the Gun when I was writing for just the blog. I can't remember the exact circumstances, but I didn't know that Mark was like, you know, 2 or 3 years younger than me. I thought that Mark was like 35. So, yeah. And then we kind of met each other later and we were like, oh wow, you're like pretty young. That's cool. But I, you know, I get that a lot from people too, like in emails with like, you know, PR people and bands and stuff, especially with bands. Like, when I've done festival coverage, like a decent bit with like Skate and Surf and, Mayhem and whatnot. And, you know, interviewing bands are always like, oh wow, like you're pretty young to be doing this. And I was like, yeah, I guess so.
Yeah. It's the in-person meetups, you know, because
yeah,
they don't get it until they see you in person. And for me, you know, I was always pretty tall and I had facial hair at a fairly young age, so I could kind of get away with it. But when, you know, they mentioned something about age, or they're like, hey, do you want to drink? I'm like, oh no, thank you. And they're like, how old are you? I'm like, I'm 19. They're like, oh wow, that's cool. But that kind of fades, you know, as time moves on, people don't care so much that you're young. So
exactly. I had the same thing with, Derek Scancarelli. We did, Skate and Surf together when I was 19, and he was like, are you serious? Like, you can't go to the bar? Like, why not? And I was like, they won't let me in. But, yeah.
Love that guy.
Oh my, he's like the funniest guy. Like, I remember meeting him in person. Like, I'll never forget the first time I actually saw him. He was outside the Wonder Bar in Asbury Park. Cause we were doing Skate and Surf, and he's like smoking a cigarette with his one friend, and he like walked up to me. He's like, you, John? I'm like, yeah. He's like, okay, cool. Come with me. And it's like, it's like, okay, like, all right, that works.
Seriously, almost the same exact meetup, except I was in New York City for 17 hours. I was with a bunch of friends from high school. We were just like there because we had cheap plane tickets for the day. Mm-hmm. And we were walking around by Ground Zero, and he texts me and he's like, dude, you're in town. Come to this address. I'm like, okay. So we show up to this address. He comes out of this random building, comes downstairs, and he's like, okay, follow me. We're going to a bar with free hot dogs. I'm like, okay, man, that's great.
Yeah, that sounds spot on. Yep.
That was a good time.
Yeah, I believe that. I've been to several states now with Derek. We went out to Scranton for Mayhem Festival, where we interviewed Mushroom Head. we've been to, I saw the Wonder Years 10-year shows with him. I got punched in the face, and I broke my nose, and he stayed in my hotel room.
Nice.
Yeah, we have quite a few meetup times like that.
Are you from New York?
I'm from New Jersey. Okay. I'm from Monmouth County. I live in West Long Branch, which is right on the ocean, basically. I live like 10 minutes from Asbury Park.
And how many minutes from your nearest Wawa?
About 7. I go there off. I was there last night, actually.
Nice. Love Wawa.
Yep. Wawa's so good. It's one of those weird things that I can't believe that's not in other parts of the country, you know?
Yeah. Other parts of the country have their own things, but none of them compare to Wawa. Wawa is like the you know, it's the golden standard for big gas station.
Yeah, it's an oasis in the middle of nowhere. And every time you see those geese flying, you know that you're in the right place.
All right, man. Well, that's great. I like, you know, kind of learning about all you UTG staffers because, you know, I hired on a lot of the early people, but there was a point where I kind of like stepped back and I gave control of that to Brian, and he's done a much better job, in my opinion. You know, I think UTG has seen some of the greatest staffers in its history just within the past 3 years. So I'm really excited to, you know, have a show like this to talk to you and hopefully talk to others like Nina and Dana, and, you know, all these other people that are out there doing like completely rad shit that I would have never expected. Just, you know, filling that roster with amazing alumni. I'm super proud of everything Under the Gun's been doing.
Absolutely. Yeah.
But, let's dig into the stuff that makes Under the Gun tick. Let's talk about some news. What's going on? What's got you excited?
Well, I think we would be remiss not to start with this brand new song that dropped a few hours ago.
Yeah, how about that?
That was I could not believe that when I like my first thought when I saw like brand new releases a new song on Twitter or whatever was like, oh wow, like I'm so glad we're recording a podcast tonight.
Well, it was weird because like 2 hours before that, all the news sites were going around saying that, you know, they were teasing a new song and that it was dropping on Friday.
Mm-hmm.
2 hours later, the entire song is on YouTube.
I think what happened was it showed up on a listing on Amazon, like brand new, I Am the Nightmare, and then here's a 30-second preview, and it said release date like May 20th.
Okay.
I think that was why everyone was saying Friday. But have you listened to the song?
I did, yeah.
What do you think of it? I'm curious, before I say anything.
I like it. I like it a lot, actually. This is probably my favorite brand new song in quite some time. And I don't just mean that because they haven't been recording music in quite some time.
It's in 7 years. It's my favorite brand new song.
I was never a huge, huge brand new fan. I really liked Your Favorite Weapon when that dropped. Mm-hmm. I identified a lot with that, but I honestly probably couldn't tell you a track from Deja.
Wow. Okay. So we're on opposite sides of the spectrum. I'm a huge brand new fan.
Okay.
I listened to it twice and I definitely like it. It's not the direction I was expecting at all. I mean, they've gone like darker, slower, moodier with each album, you know, like, I mean, Your Favorite Weapon's like a like pop punk summer album and Daisy is like weird and screamy and slow and, hectic, I guess.
Yeah.
It's like reading a textbook basically. So to hear this kind of like, you know, this is more like Deja than anything, mm-hmm. I think. And I'm really surprised. I was taken aback a lot.
Did you not expect it to be like this poppy?
Not at all. No, I expected it to be, you know, weird, like hard to listen to.
Yeah.
I expected it to be like dense and I don't know exactly what I expected. That's brand new for you, I guess. I didn't expect it to sound like Daisy, but I didn't really expect them to go and make something with a hook either. So I'm still trying to process it. I do like the song. I think, let's just dive into this a little bit. For me, I think the biggest issue I take with it is the chorus.
Okay.
I do like the, I am a nightmare, you are a miracle, like lyric thing there, but, I don't know. I still feel like I'm coming back to the fact that I can't believe that there's a hook in that. Like, I don't have a problem with the hook. It's just the fact that it has one is so odd to me.
Well, I think, you know, like the myth of brand new, you know, they're so secretive and so quiet and they take them. It sort of seems like they take themselves so seriously. Am I right by saying that?
Definitely.
Okay.
Yeah.
So I'm kind of with you. This is definitely not what I was expecting at all. I was expecting something more brooding, a lot slower, a lot darker. And sort of like, yeah, we're back. And like, we're brand new, you know, and this is like the thing
Definitely.
That people have been feeding off of, you know, kind of expecting for 7 years. But I like that they came out of left field with this hooky poppy indie jam. I thought it was great. You know,
right.
I'm a huge Killers fan and I think this has, you know, a lot of those kind of vibes in it. And who knows, man, I kind of feel like they're going for something bigger than before, because they're a cult band for sure, but they could totally get radio play. You know, they're big enough for that. Why not go for it?
The funny thing with that was, I don't know if you saw like the coverage it's gotten, but it was posted about in Pitchfork, which kind of surprised me. Mm-hmm. Billboard covered it. Like all these like big publications covered this new brand new song, which like, I mean, you know, you expect like the scene publications to hop all over this and like be excited. You know, Alt Press is going to be excited about it. Under the Gun's going to be excited about it. I'm sure Chorus and everything like that posted about it. But I think this could be huge. And I think you actually raise a really good point there. They're touring stadiums this summer with Modest Mouse. And this feels kind of like a stadium rock song.
It's perfect.
Definitely.
That's a great tour package.
For sure. And I think especially in like they're playing like Madison Square Garden and stuff. And I think I can see this, you know, fitting that style a lot more than some of the stuff on Daisy or even Devil and God.
Yeah. Here's my thought on that. I think you bring up an interesting point about how it's like getting bigger coverage and, you know, obviously they're doing bigger tours. Brand New was never a small band. But when they were big in their scene, the scene was a lot smaller, you know? And mm-hmm. It's grown a lot since then, and their fan base has grown a lot in their absence. People really appreciate Brand New, you know, especially because they've been gone. You know, like people want to know what this thing's all about, especially if they're going to come back. They don't want to be behind. So people are kind of picking up on that, which makes the crowd and the audience a little bigger. But also, you have to consider that all of the people that were writing enthusiastically about Brand New 7-8 years ago, they're still writing about music. And chances are they're probably at a bigger publication.
That's a really good point. Yeah.
I mean, Thomas is a great example. He's not doing it so much anymore, but you know, Thomas was writing about Brand New and that and those sort of bands when he was writing at Absolute Punk, but then he went to Fuse.
For sure.
And that's when Fuse started covering the Wonder Years and Fireworks and all the pop punk bands that we really enjoy. Like, this is a much bigger outlet covering a band that we kind of consider like, you know, our own thing. It's growing, and that's mostly in part to people growing in their own careers and kind of like pushing their own favorites on their outlet whenever they can.
Definitely. And I think another element with that too is the fact that we had the quote unquote emo revival a few years ago.
Thanks, Ian Cohen.
Yeah, but exactly. Well, exactly. Thank you, Ian Cohen, because by covering bands like The Hotelier and You Blew It and, you know, all these bands that kind of grew up listening to Brand New that are like us and said like, yeah, like, you know, our influences are Brand New and Death Cab and all these like big quote unquote emo bands.
Right.
They kind of become, you know, bigger as well, which is pretty neat, I think. And now here we are, where Brand New can sell out Madison Square Garden in less than a day. So after not putting anything out for 7 years, too, that's the thing that kind of surprises me, is that Brand New has no momentum going into this album cycle. So for them to, you know, there's a good chance they'll probably chart on the billboards, and they're probably going to, I mean, they sold out a ridiculous amount of venues. So
I wouldn't be surprised if that vinyl single that they published with the single today was already gone.
I can see that. Yeah. I read the thing. I think they're doing like an indefinite number.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Which, you know, that, what do you think about that? What do you think about the fact that they're doing a 12-inch record for the single?
Why not, man?
I thought that was strange.
You know they know they're going to sell it.
Yeah.
I mean, look at how much Brand New vinyl goes for on Discogs and how yeah. quickly the represses go. Like, these aren't represses that just like warm the shelves for a while. They're gone. Like, people are showing up at Black Friday 10-15 hours early just so they can be the first one in the door to grab that, you know, that Brand New repress.
That's true. Yeah, Record Store Day last year, like, people were camping out for days to get the Deja repress. So I can imagine.
I had one in my store.
Yeah, I don't even know how many they had in my store, because you know, we drove, like, you know, my buddy and I were driving back, or he was driving back and let me know like, oh yeah, like, I just drove past the record store, like 12 hours before they opened, and there was like a line down the street. So we're like, okay, well, we're not doing Record Store Day then. Yeah. I guess we'll like, get that eventually.
Well, you probably still could have gone. Those people would have got inside, saw that, like, you know, the ones that they were camping out for got gone really quick, and they probably left.
That's true. Yeah. I went at like 10 a.m. on Record Store Day last year, 'cause I knew there was no chance I was going to get Deja. So I just like picked up, like, the good thing about Record Store Day is they always, stock the, you know, they have stock outside of the exclusives and whatnot. So mm-hmm. I picked up, like, you know, Stay What You Are by Saves the Day and, like, Run the Jewels and stuff that I wanted but could never really find.
Yeah.
So I think that's probably the way I would do it now.
Usually I can't go like first thing in the morning. Either I have work or, you know, just a matter of distance or something means I'm not going to get there in time for the door opening. I generally don't have much of a problem finding anything I need. And usually, like, there are some friends, like, on Facebook in the Under the Gun group or on Twitter or something that are, like, looking out for the same stuff that'll grab an extra for me if they can.
Yeah, I got everything I wanted this year, which was, like, the first time that's ever happened.
You mean for Black Friday or for Record Store Day itself?
For Record Store Day itself. I got the Brian Fallon, like, EP and the acoustic Frank Turner record, and I think maybe it's just the record stores we have around here. Like, you know, my local record store is Jack's Music Shop, which is like, it's in Chasing Amy. Like, we have Princeton Record Exchange. Like, we have like huge record stores here. And you know, thus a pretty big like following. Mm-hmm. So I mean, we went to Princeton a couple years ago and we had to like wait in line for 5 hours and stuff like that.
Oh, man.
Yeah. So I don't know. It kind of gets like, I don't know. It became like stressful for me after a while to do Record Store Day. So when I heard that the Deja Nintendo repress was, you know, in small quantities and there was a line out the door, I was like, okay, no thank you.
All right, so Brand New's back. They've got a new record coming out at some point. Is there a name for this record yet?
There's not, but I think the news story today is that there is going to be a record. This isn't like Meanie last year where it's just a single. This is like a promotional single from an album that definitely exists.
Right. It's been fairly widespread that they've been recording mm-hmm. over the past couple months.
I think you know, we have like photo evidence of that now. I think it's not like he said she said, it's like, you know, Mike Sapone posted this on Instagram kind of thing.
Oh man.
So I think there is definitely like an album that exists now. I think that's the difference between this and Meanie. I think Meanie was they recorded a single with intentions to record an album, put out the single, and they just never recorded the album. I think the album definitely exists now, and I can kind of see that coming by, like, the fall.
And then once it's out, can we finally stop talking about Brand New and start hoping for that Shone revival? I want LP, too.
I do not like that album at all, so, if you're being sarcastic,
I'm not. I'm a huge Heat Thing fan. Big fan.
Ooh, okay.
I was so excited when they said it wasn't Brand New. Everybody's like buzzing about it because they had that amazing campaign, like that really cool
that was the coolest
campaign.
Thing.
I followed it every hour. I was like refreshing the boards and I was following all the stuff that people were finding. And you know, people were like, is it Brand New? Is it Brand New? And when they finally announced that it was, and I was like, yes, this is great.
Yeah. It was like some flash drive, like in a box in some like greenhouse. Like that, it was like that kind of
thing, man.
Right? Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Levi Gudmundsen. They had like, you know, codes and numbers and riddles and stuff. It was great. I love that. That's so much fun.
that was the coolest thing. Yeah, I remember that now. That was like, and that's the kind of thing that only the members of Brand New could pull off too. So I can totally understand why everyone was pretty excited about that being Brand New.
There was only one member of Brand New in that, right?
Yeah, it was Brian, right? Their drummer.
Yeah. Well, it threw everybody off because there was like the website, and you can put like your address and your email in for information. And then you could download like a contact card. It's just like a part of the site. Like you have the ability to download the contact card to know like who has your information. And it was Brian's name.
That's right.
So Everybody was like going nuts.
I remember that. I was going to say like a PayPal thing or something came up with Brian's name.
Yeah.
But
gave it away. But
yeah.
So Brand New's back. And so is Acceptance. Can we talk about this?
I would love to talk about Acceptance.
All right. Acceptance is back. And honestly, I didn't think it was going to happen.
Mm-mm.
I really didn't. A year or two ago, I spent about a week in the studio with Aaron Sprinkle. I was there with a band called Shapes and Colors, and they were recording their EP. And it was an amazing week, and I just kept kind of like dropping hints here and there, like, you know, hey, have you talked to Jason? Is anything going on? He let nothing slip. So at that point, I don't think it was even close to happening. But here we are, 2016, and they're recording a new album.
Yeah, it's insane. I think it almost kind of, like for me, I think Acceptance, you know, I never got into that album when it was coming out. I was young when that album was coming out, obviously. So to me, that's just been kind of one of those like legendary stories of this band came along and dropped this like amazing classic record, didn't get any promotion, and then broke up, and they'll never do anything again. And that was kind of like the narrative I you know, kind of loved about Acceptance. So I saw them last year on their reunion tour. They played at Skate and Surf, And the whole time I was just in disbelief. I was like, I can't believe I'm seeing this band live right now.
Yeah.
Like, this isn't just a really good cover band. This is like actually Acceptance, like playing these songs.
That's how I felt about Fall Out Boy at Skate and Surf in 2013 now.
Yeah, same thing here. I remember I was like pretty much in disbelief, and they played like Folie à Deux songs and stuff too. And man, that was really cool. I got the same exact feeling with Acceptance. I couldn't believe that it was like the actual, you know, like that was a reunion that I had like, you know, never thought was going to happen.
Right. And there they are.
Not for like animosity or anything, but just because it, you know, it just seemed like they weren't interested in it anymore.
I think the stars aligned. You know, this is a scene where anniversary tours are huge, because like this music is so nostalgic. You know, the scene exists, but it's a lot different than it was. So these bands coming back into the fold and doing these 10-year anniversary tours and doing reunion records, they're making bank on it. You know,
yeah,
that plays a part. It's not to say that they're just coming back for the money, but it's a big deal. You know, if they're living their lives with, you know, wives and families, it's kind of hard to make the decision to leave. That decision is made a lot easier when there's a paycheck at the end of it.
Definitely. Especially in that, like, you know, if, you know, I don't really think Acceptance is going to like come back full time and, you know, tour 300 days out of the year and everything. But if they can do, you know, a tour in the summer and put out a new album, that, you know, that's perfect. That's all I think anyone really needs from them, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's great. I'm really looking forward to seeing them. They haven't had any shows nearby. They did like that. They did a West Coast run, and then they did some shows on the East Coast, but they haven't made it as far inland as Ohio. So I'm sitting here waiting. But I'm really excited. I pre-ordered the record. They're doing it through Pledge Music, I think.
Mm-hmm. That's like a Kickstarter kind of thing.
Yeah,
right?
It's more or less like a Kickstarter. I remember Juliet Sims did one on there, and I think Coheed might have done a record through that.
That's right. Yeah, I think Saves the Day did as well.
It's fine. You know, it's more or less like a pre-order system. Like, they know they're going to make the record. This is just sort of a way to get the money up front to kind of finance the record from the start, so they don't have to do, you know, they don't have to borrow that money from the label or anything like that. It's a good way to kind of go indie.
For sure. Yeah, it's not the Dangerous Summer, so you know it's actually going to happen too, right?
I don't know if we're allowed to say anything, or Cody Payne might try to sue us.
Yeah, I'll see. We'll see if that happens.
He's threatened me a couple times.
Has he really?
Oh my gosh, man. That guy, yeah.
Well, okay. Well, you know, we'll move on. anything else you want to talk about here? What's what else is good?
You got in here, Car Seat Headrest album was recalled over an uncleared sample.
Yes. This is really fascinating to me. I'm not familiar with the band Car Seat Headrest. I know they've been getting a lot of hype. I saw, you know, Stephen Hayden did an episode of his podcast where he interviewed the Hotelier and this band. And I listened to, you know, the whole thing and everything. So I'd heard of the band. I was not like familiar with their music. But this is just fascinating to me. The album, which was supposed to come out both physically and digitally on May 20th, which is this coming Friday, it featured a sample from The Cars of their song Just What I Needed. And the Car Seat Headrest song was called Just What I Wanted / Not Just What I Needed. So apparently they negotiated in good faith months ago, only to be told last week that the publisher involved was not authorized to complete the license in the United States. So basically what happened was they had to recall thousands, and they, like, that's their word, thousands of copies of CD and vinyl for this, you know, I'm assuming like, you know, rock record, just because of this uncleared sample. Now that's a really strange situation.
Yeah.
So I was wondering, like, do you have any take on that at all? Or,
well, I wonder how it got that far. Like, how did it go to print without having that sample cleared? You know, if they had filed for the license, why'd they go ahead without waiting?
Yeah, for sure. That's kind of my question too. I can't, you know, I feel like if there's even a shadow of a doubt, if it's not in writing, you shouldn't print copies of it clearly. I don't, you know, I'm sure somewhere along the line, they felt they had the permission to do this, but yeah, I feel like that's a pretty big jump there in terms of you know, miscommunication.
Huh.
I don't know.
Interesting.
They have this photo here of like boxes and boxes of records. You know, it looks like, I don't know, it looks like they probably, I'm on this Billboard article here.
Yeah, this is a Billboard article by Lars Brandl. We'll have a link for it in the show notes.
For sure. It looks like there's probably like 20 records in this box, and then there's probably four boxes in one of these crates, and there's got to be like 25 crates and they're all just waiting to be destroyed. Yeah, that is a nightmare. I feel bad for Matador Records.
Yeah, that's expensive. Hopefully it doesn't seem like there are any consequences for the band themselves. I mean, this kind of seems like it's the label's fault. So
yeah, for sure. I would say that's definitely, I don't think that the band members themselves are saying, you know, we got to send an email to Rick Ocasek from The Cars.
Right.
But yeah, that's, you know, that's just astounding. I mean, this kind of thing happens in rap, you know, from time to time. You know, I know like the Eagles got really mad, or like Glenn Frey, who just recently passed away, got really mad at Frank Ocean for sampling Hotel California and American Wedding. And that, you know, that wasn't even sold. Same thing, Donald Trump tried to sue Mac Miller over that song. You know, I mean, you see it in rap all the time. I was really surprised to see this in like a rock centered world.
Yeah, it's definitely not as common. You know, there have definitely been cases over the years, but it's interesting to see it in a modern context, because these days, like, we hear so many stories about this. Like, of course, you know, you're really careful about these things. And if you're going to use a sample, you work hard to get it. Otherwise, you don't use it. It's not worth the trouble, especially in cases like this, when you print thousands of records and then...
That's the thing. I feel like it wasn't like, you know, someone had to go back on their word or something. That is a lot of money to put into something that you're not sure you have the rights to, but whatever.
I mean, vinyl is kind of it's a leap of faith as it is. You know, it's really expensive to press.
Oh, yeah.
And I mean, you make decent returns on it, but not when you gotta destroy every single one of them. That sucks.
Yeah. Yeah. Do you want to talk about something else here?
Yeah, I do. Speaking of hip hop, I want to talk about Chance the Rapper.
Okay. I feel qualified to talk about Chance the Rapper.
Fantastic. Before we talk about Coloring Book, which is great. I mean, can I say that? Do you agree with that? It's kind of really good.
Oh, yeah. That is like album of the year contender for me. Yeah, definitely.
I want to talk about this news bit about Chance the Rapper and a Childish Gambino mixtape. It apparently exists. It's somewhere out there. We've yet to hear about it. So are you a Gambino fan? Is this something that you're interested in?
Yeah, definitely. I'm a huge Gambino fan. I'm a huge Chance fan. So this interests me quite a bit. Just for some background, this has been something that's been rumored for like going on years now, I would say. You know, like the Because the Internet album, the Childish Gambino record, features Chance the Rapper on it. And Chance was kind of featured on some of the older Gambino stuff too. Like, I think a lot of people don't realize it now, but like Chance kind of was like a Childish Gambino prodigy early on. And you know, they've talked a lot about, yeah, we're gonna do a joint mixtape. It's gonna be cool, and it just kind of never came into fruition. And I think this was confirmed in a Reddit AMA that Chance just did. He said like, oh yeah, it exists. Like some coy answer, like not saying he's going to put it out anytime soon, but saying that.
Well, the question was, does Chance and Childish Gambino collab album mixtape still exist? Chance's response, yes. Nothing more, just yes.
Okay, yeah.
So it's out there.
I would be super interested in that. I think, you know, the thing for me is, I think, you know, we did get the Chance and Gambino, they teamed up for a song on... Because the Internet, but it wasn't really, I don't think that song is like one of the best songs on the album, and I think neither of them really hit their full potential on it.
Yeah,
but
I think Favorite Song on Acid Rap was a much better collab.
Much better. Yeah. I still think we're waiting to like hear both of them full potential though, like on even one song together, let alone a full mixtape.
What I like about both rappers is that they have so much range, you know?
Mm-hmm.
They can do it like a straight Drake track, you know? Totally vibing, kind of melancholy. And then the next one is totally ignorant. You know, it's just a total club banger. So I want this to come out sooner than later. I think it'd be silly to put it out anytime soon just because of the hype that Coloring Book is getting right now. But, you know, Gambino's kind of been quiet.
Absolutely, yeah. Apparently he has a record.
Does he? Does he have a new one?
Yeah, I think like maybe last fall or so. I saw it recently. Someone tweeted, like someone from some choir said like, oh yeah, like we're recording vocals today for the new like Childish Gambino album. You know, like someone under a non-disclosure agreement probably spilled the beans kind of thing. So that definitely exists, and I think he's probably biding his time too, because he's working in TV and everything. I think he had a pilot picked up. I think as far as, you know, you're saying about how both of these rappers are so like diverse and what they can put out, you know, like the way I was talking to one of my friends about the Chance the Rapper mixtape coloring book, and I said I think it has a really good balance between the acid rap kind of like drugs rap, mm-hmm. like the wild, hectic, like screaming his face off kind of stuff, and like, you know, religious Chance the Rapper.
Yeah, definitely a lot more like gospel inspired.
Yeah,
stuff.
Yeah. I think you know, I think we're starting to see the Kanye influence there a lot. I think he's on Ultralight Beam on track one of Life of Pablo, and there's definitely a lot of that, you know, gospel stuff in here. So I'm pretty excited about Coloring Book. I don't need a new mixtape. You know, maybe in the fall I'll be changing my mind about that. I can see him maybe doing what Drake did last year, where he put out If You're Reading This, It's Too Late early in the year, and then did What a Time to Be Alive with Future towards the end of the summer, like early fall maybe.
That'd be rad.
I can definitely see that.
That'd be cool.
So what's your take on Coloring Book? You said you like it a lot. What's your how are you feeling about it?
Man, I love it, and I. Over the past few years, I've been kind of like getting out of digging into new music so much. You know, there's usually like two or three a year that I'm really excited about, and that's just about all I listen to. But I'm starting to get back into new stuff. And the cool thing is for me personally is that my sister is kind of on that wave. You know, she's on Tumblr, and, you know, she's hitting SoundCloud and Twitter, just finding like the new stuff, all the stuff that the blogs are like super excited about. So it's kind of switched. I used to be the guy that the older brother that would give her music suggestions, and I would fill up her iPod with whatever I had, and she would listen to that. And that was what she was into. And now it's kind of flipped around, and I'm really getting into some of the stuff that she digs. So I started getting into Chance not too long ago, actually. You know, I'd hear him on tracks and I was like, yeah, this is pretty cool. I didn't really get into acid rap, but then Surf dropped that Donnie Trumpet collaboration, and it blew me away. And I loved it. So when Coloring Book dropped, I listened to that right away, pulled up Apple Music and just started streaming. And man, right from the start, you know, that first song with Kanye, it's like, ooh, it's so good. I mean, it's got that Kanye production, but it's got that full children's choir in the background. It's just so big.
Mm-hmm. Oddly enough, I've been seeing that song take like probably the most heat on the record. I feel like that's the one that people have been not connecting with as much, which I think is insane, because I think, you know, I don't know. I think when you hear a Kanye like feature nowadays, you can probably expect it to be a weird song. So I was fully expecting Kanye to like, you know, be under vocoder and under like weird robotic voice effects and stuff. So yeah, I think that's a perfect intro. Even though it's not the intro, it's the entree. Apparently,
hit that intro with Kanye, who didn't even rap.
No, not at all. He just kind of makes weird noises and like talks and stuff and makes his weird robot sounds.
He just does the hook.
Yeah, and I think maybe with the exception of Kanye, who does something, you know, obviously pretty unique on there, I think every other feature is, they're working at, like, top potential here. You know, I think, you know, Future later on the record has a really, really great verse. You have a really good Justin Bieber hook on here.
Oh,
Young Thug and Lil Yachty, they both do their thing, you know, and they do it extremely well. Not to mention, like, I was really taken aback by that 2 Chainz verse on No Problem on track 2.
Uh-huh.
Man, like that song is not what I was expecting it to be at all, but I really love it.
I mean, having Lil Wayne and 2 Chainz on a Chance record was kind of wild to me. You know, I didn't imagine that he was that big. I had no idea that he would have talent like Lil Wayne, 2 Chainz, and Bieber of all people. You know, Bieber's singing an amazing hook on Juke Jam. I love it.
Yeah.
That was the first track when I mentioned it to my sister. I'm like, hey, have you listened to Coloring Book yet? She's like, no. Is it good? I'm like, jump straight to Juke Jam. Like, you gotta hear this.
For sure. I think we probably could have seen the Kanye feature coming, but I was not expecting Lil Wayne and 2 Chainz. I definitely wasn't expecting Young Thug. I felt that was a you know, when I was looking through the track listing, I thought that was kind of weird, but that song, that's one of my favorites on their mixtape.
That I was jamming out to that on the way back home to get ready for this. I was getting hyped.
I think one thing I'd like to highlight here too is that track 13, Finish Line, like the first half of that song has T-Pain on it.
Yeah.
It's been quite a long time since we've seen T-Pain relevant on like a AAA rap release. And I'm more than okay with T-Pain coming back in and singing every hook.
Last time T-Pain was in the news, he was doing a stripped-down acoustic thing on Tiny Desk.
Oh, on NPR, yeah. Right? Yeah, on the Tiny Desk sessions. That was great.
Was really like, great.
That was, yeah, that was surprisingly good.
He's apparently been doing a lot of that lately. He's doing a lot of live appearances stripped down.
See, I think that's really cool. Like, he kind of beat Kanye to the auto-tune thing. Like, he did a record called Rapper Turned Singer before Kanye did 808s and Heartbreak, which kind of got all the credit for the auto-tune.
Yeah.
You know, revival. So I'm, you know, he knows what he's doing. He does this thing really well on Finish Line. This is just a feel good album. I feel like this year has been full of just albums that make you happy. And I think this is taking the crown as far as that goes for me.
I think I'll have to disagree on that, but I will agree that this is super feel good. And this is the record of the summer.
Hmm. What's what else you've been listening to that's happy that you've been enjoying?
Nothing.
Okay.
Nothing at all. I've been listening to this. I've been listening to James Blake.
Ooh, okay.
Which really never makes me super happy.
Right.
And Pine Grove, man.
For sure. Yeah. Okay. I can see that now. See where I've been. I've been really enjoying the Kanye record, which is you know, definitely positive. I'd say it's pretty similar to Coloring Book in terms of like the gospel stuff and the optimism. And also this Tiny Moving Parts album is, you know, a lot of fun as well, which is kind of weird because they used to be really sad. But
yeah, this one's really optimistic apparently. I've not heard it yet, but I've been reading about it.
I'm a big fan of it. What do you think of the name Coloring Book? I wasn't he had been teasing it as just Chance 3.
Right.
I fully thought that was gonna be the name of the album.
I mean, like,
just
right up to
the
release.
Yeah, like up until like oh yeah, Chance 3 is coming tonight. He was calling it dropped on a Thursday night. He's like, it's Thursday. all that stuff. And he has a 3 on his hat on the album artwork, which kind of fits stylistically with acid rap and
same guy did the art for all of them.
Yeah, yeah. And I like the unification of that. Like, there's things like that just make me like satisfied. You know, that he has this continuity of 3 mixtapes, like 3 solo official mixtapes or whatever, and they're all tied together by that artwork.
Yeah. I think it's great. It, you know, it has that vibe, but it definitely, you know, with the clouds in the background, the stars, you know, it's sort of that tip to the heavens, you know? Like,
right,
hey,
right.
This is kind of the same, but we're going a little bigger.
Mm-hmm. Apparently too, in this photo, I think I read this on some interview or something like that, but the original photo that the artwork is styled after, he's looking down at his daughter, like he's holding his daughter in his arms.
Oh, really?
So I kind of think that's like, yeah, and you can kind of see like the smile on his face, like the light shining and everything. I think it's an amazing artwork. I'm not sure where the title comes from, but I do really like the artwork a lot.
Yeah, I like that too. I like the idea of that even more. I think that's sweet. He definitely sings about her a lot on this record.
Mm-hmm. Definitely, yeah.
I love Same Drugs. I think that's my standout track right now. That song, like, I don't know. It's a great chorus to start.
For me, that song feels like that has like top 40 potential, which is kind of, I mean, I think, you know, No Problem is probably the catchiest thing on here. Juke Jam has the Justin Bieber factor and it's also very catchy.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, Smoke Break is kind of a, like that seems like that and Mixtape both seem like they're playing more to the hip hop side of things.
Yeah. Those will be on the college stations. For sure.
Oh, yeah, for sure. But I think Same Drugs is the one, you know, it kind of reminds me of like the first time I heard Thrift Shop by Macklemore, where I'm like, this is something totally different that is like going to blow up. I can definitely see that being the case. I think that's kind of a leap of faith there, but I can, like, that song has like crossover potential to me.
Absolutely. I agree with that 100%. I also, the one I wake up to most days is either Dram Sing Special is on my mind a lot. That just kind of like pops into my head. But All Night just keeps, when I wake up in the morning,
oh yeah,
I'm just like, oh man, it's in my head again.
That song reminds me a lot of One Dance by Drake, which was like, that's his new big single. It's on Views. It has that, like, those same kind of just like upbeat, like dancey vibes, like that. Like the first time I listened to this album, I thought like, okay, this is the one dance of this album. It's like in the third act, it's, you know, it's dancey, it's constant, and I can see that being like a middle school dance song. Like there's a lot here for people that are like, this isn't just for rap fans. This isn't like by any means like a crossover into top 40 entirely, but there's a lot here I think that someone can enjoy.
Right.
And that's what I think it's so strong about it. And What do you think about the fact that there's two songs on here called Blessings, like Blessings 1 and Blessings 2?
I like that. I know he explained that somewhere. I think he did it on the AMA. I don't have that in front of me, but I like it. You know, there's one towards the beginning there, and then there's one that brings it all together at the end. And what I really like about the second one is that it features a bunch of people that aren't really credited. That one has BJ the Chicago Kid on it, as well as Anderson .Paak.
Right.
So that's rad. Anderson .Paak's been a big favorite of mine for the past couple of years. Another one my sister actually tipped me to. So it's kind of cool to hear him on that record, because I want to hear a full Chance .Paak collab. That'd be rad.
Right. That's the cool thing about rap right now, where like none of that stuff seems off the table. Like that feels like something that could happen.
Absolutely.
I guess, you know. I like it too. I like, you know, this feels like an album. It doesn't feel like a mixtape. It feels like it has kind of a, well, I mean, obviously it has like single potential and stuff, but it's also, it feels like it's meant to be listened to start to finish. You mm-hmm. know, it has a definite like continuity to it.
He changed that up towards the end before they released it. The sequencing was different. I think he actually had Finish Line as the intro track.
Oh yeah, I heard about that. That's interesting. I don't know how I feel about that.
I mean, it completely changes the flow.
Yeah, definitely. I think All We Got, too, like the Kanye song, that is such like a natural opener to me that I can't imagine. You know, I mean, I guess they probably wrote that as the intro, too. Like, you know, even it references it lyrically.
Yeah. I mean, it's the first line.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm sure that came later. I mean, these things always kind of change last minute. And, you know.
Yeah, just look at Kanye. You know, he was like publishing that. Like, yeah, we changed the track list again today. Like,
or even after he releases it. I mean, I think Kanye is one of the first to ever change the sequencing of a record several times after it's actually out.
I just saw the CD version of the Drake album Views is like slightly different than the digital version. Like largely like 15 second outros are cut down, things like that. But I think we're kind of moving in that direction now, where like, you know, it's kind of fair game for an artist to change their album after, you know, it drops.
Well, it's an easy way to boost sales too.
Oh yeah, totally.
Because like, you know, there are crazy Drake fans that are going to buy the CD version of the record because it has 15 seconds of extra audio on the out track.
Absolutely, yeah. Yeah, I think that is a really interesting thing. And I think with streaming, that kind of becomes, you know, the case here. Speaking of that, what do you think about this being an Apple Music exclusive? I think a lot of people were surprised by that, considering he's given all of the stuff away for free before. This did go up on DatPiff a few hours, like a mixtape site, a few hours after the case, and was taken down because apparently it was unofficial.
Right. I'm for it. I mean, why not? I mean, if you're going to put it out for free, I mean, people can't really complain. You know, if they're not paying for Apple Music, they're not paying at all for this record when it finally hits, you know, Chance's website or wherever it happens to be. It's fine. You know, I mean, it's the game now. You're going to do an exclusive somewhere because they're going to promote it a lot harder if it's their own thing, because they're trying to get mm-hmm. subscribers. So Apple does a really great job. You know, when I opened up Apple Music that morning, I expected to find it front and center, and there it was. The top banner was Chance the Rapper, and if I slid it to the side, Chance the Rapper. Every one of the slots,
every single panel,
everyone was for Chance. And I'm fine with that. I'm totally cool with it. You know, obviously I'm a subscriber to Apple Music, so it's a little more convenient for me. You know, for example, I still have not heard the Kanye record. Is it available on places other than Tidal now?
It is now. It's on Apple Music and all that now. I was just gonna say, you know, I switched over to Apple Music like probably last week from Spotify, because they added the student discount. I was like, okay, well, you know, now there's no reason not to have it. So the way I'm looking at this exclusive is it's insane how much better Apple does this than, you know, say Tidal or, you know, anything like that. Mm-hmm. Like you said, it feels like an event when this album came out. It felt like, you know, you go, like you said, you go into Apple Music and like every panel, every, you know, little station has, the Chance the Rapper mixtape promoted. It feels like, okay, like this is an album, it's out. You have to listen to this now and then go online, talk about it. You know, it feels like it's not just, you know, falling out into the world and then you might buy it, you might talk about it at work. Like, it feels like, you know, an important element of pop culture.
Like, this is what you need to do today.
Exactly, yeah. Like, this is what everyone's talking about, everyone's doing it, it's a big deal, and you haven't listened to it yet. What are you doing?
Yeah, and it's not even like, you know, we're seeing that on, like, the new page, like, the new tab of Apple Music. But if you were to go, like, to the For You section, at least for me, since I had some Chance stuff in my library, it was recommending me like every playlist that they had regarding Chance the Rapper.
Wow. Okay. Yeah. I didn't take a look at, I barely go on that For You tab anymore. Yeah, I like that a lot. I like that they're promoting it so heavily. I liked, you know, when they had Views coming out a few weeks ago, which was also Apple Music exclusive. There was this long interview with Zane Lowe, like right before the album dropped on Beats One.
Yeah, I listened to that first.
Yeah, I did the same. I turned it off halfway through because I figured, okay, I'll listen to this later. I just want to hear the album now. But I think that's really cool. I think Apple's doing it really well, where you have, you know, this really sloppy release from Kanye, where it's just, you know, I don't know, like the sloppiness of that album I think put a lot of people off to it.
Yeah.
And then it being on Tidal, and you know, he went on SNL and said, oh yeah, the album's on Tidal now, like kanyewest.tidal.com, and then you go there and the album doesn't work, and then like 3 hours later it's finally up. I don't know, I think that compared to this is just, I don't think exclusives are inherently a bad thing at all. And I think Apple shows that it's realistic, you know, especially when you have Chance the Rapper. He announced the album officially last week.
Yeah.
So if you want to look at it one way, he just kind of gave you a sneak preview of the album if you're subscribed to Apple Music, you know.
I mean, for me, I was an RDO user for years. I loved it, and I still miss it to this day. But if I were still using RDO or using Spotify or something in favor of Apple Music, I'd be fine waiting. You know, I'm going to hear it at some point, but like you said, with Apple Music, if you have that, you're going to listen to it right away because they make it such a huge featured thing. As soon as you open that up, no matter what it was you went in there to listen to, you're probably going to listen to Chance because it's a big deal. So I'm cool with it. I'm totally fine with exclusives. And if something ends up going up on Spotify before it hits Apple Music, I'm fine with that.
Right. Right, I was also on RDO for a long time, and I was on Spotify until just recently. I had Apple Music for a while last year, and then I switched over just to save money with the discount. But yeah, like, you know, the 1975 album was exclusive to Apple Music for 2 weeks. Like some of the biggest albums of the year have been exclusives.
I think Ariana.
Oh yeah, Ariana is exclusive as well. I just tried listening to that song in the future, and that's not on YouTube or anything.
Yeah.
I think interestingly too, the Radiohead album, Moonshaped Pool, is not on Spotify, but it is on Apple Music. It's on Tidal. It's on like everything else. And I think, you know, I can almost kind of see Spotify starting to die right now, just given the fact that they don't want to do exclusives and the fact that everyone else seems to be doing it so much better.
Right. I mean, it's a game. I mean, it's competition. You got to have some sort of competition, because if you're not going to do it with price, the only thing you can do it with is content. And
exactly.
It's a motivator. I mean, for sure. I mean, people are at least going to do trials of certain things to listen to that record. I mean, look at how many people signed on to Tidal just for Kanye. You know, that's crazy.
Oh, yeah, a lot.
I mean, how many of those people canceled their subscriptions as soon as they finished the record?
I wonder, like, you know, that's Tidal press release talk. I wonder, like, if they got a dollar from, like, what percentage of those people, or they just got, like, 1.2 million subscribers, I think, from Beyonce, which is another huge exclusive they had. And, you know, I wonder, like, are those people going to stick around for more than a month? Like, I had Tidal last year when it launched just to play around with it a little bit, and I canceled my subscription, like, almost immediately.
Yeah. I think Dana was the only one I knew that actually had used it. And
yeah.
They have big players. I mean, there's no denying that. They have Kanye, Jay-Z, Beyonce, Jack White. They have big people involved, but those people also have money at stake. You know?
I think Tidal made a couple like huge mistakes early on. I don't know. Right now, I don't think they're as doomed as everyone else is. Or everyone else seems to think. I think they definitely have enough exclusive content to last them through the year, but you know, I can see them getting bought out at some point. I don't think Tidal's gonna last forever.
I think their business model is it's a little messy.
Well, they leaked that Rihanna album too, which doesn't help. When Rihanna came out, like it, you know, it was like, oh wait, like if you go on Tidal right now, you can listen to the album that Rihanna hasn't announced. And then she had to put it out like the next day, you know, and that probably lost her quite a bit of money.
Yeah, well, we'll see how it all shakes out. For now, I'm cool with Apple Music, except for when they add music to my my device without asking. You ever have that?
Oh yeah, you too. Whatever that was.
No. Like stuff, just random stuff. it just downloads to my device without me asking. Like stuff I haven't listened to in years.
Oh, okay.
It's bizarre.
I haven't had that bug.
I've heard a couple other people that had it, and I had a conversation, like a email thread going with their support team because they had never heard of it. And they're like trying to get all this information from me and have me, you know, reset my device and see if it duplicated. And basically, you know, if I have songs in my library, you know, even old stuff that's in my iTunes or my iCloud personal library, stuff that I uploaded from my hard drive. If I get into my car or connect to any other Bluetooth device and it just automatically starts to play music like it sometimes does, whatever that song is, it will just download to my device.
Wow. Okay. Yeah, that's a pretty big bug considering Apple's still selling 16 gig phones.
Exactly. I have a 16 gigabyte 6 Plus and it's killing me.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, geez. That's a nightmare. Yeah. Apple Music is definitely not near as stable as Spotify was for me. You know, like the very first thing I added was I got the Modern Baseball album and I put that into Apple Music. Like it was the first thing I put into my library, like once I turned Apple iCloud Music Library on. And that, you know, I just got like a flashback from last year with like the bug where you don't get artwork. Like it's not that it has like a blank artwork, it just has nothing. So when your phone's locked and it's playing, there's just nothing under the media player thing on the iPhone. And I was like, yeah, like that happened to me so much last year. And I was like, well, I'm glad to see that Apple Music still has fixed all their bugs, you know? So
yeah, I get that too. Sometimes I'll get it where like the album art is half the size it's supposed to be. And maybe that's like a caching issue because my phone is so full. I'm not sure, but yeah, there are bugs. I know Apple Music is actually releasing an overhaul pretty soon.
Right. For WWDC, right?
Yeah. You know, it'll probably be out and they're ditching all like the gradients and the weird like color things. They're going to like a flat, black and white thing, which I kind of think is going to come out sort of like Instagram's new update, if you've seen that.
I have, yeah. I was just going to say that kind of sounds like Instagram's new thing, like flat black and white. I'm into that.
Yeah, hopefully their logo isn't as bad.
Yeah, oh God, yeah. I think it's kind of funny because the actual like musical note of the music app looks like kind of like the Instagram app, like the gradient and all that.
Yeah, it has a gradient, but it's not as obscene.
Yeah, oh no. I don't know. I think they should have just gone like for a black and white Instagram app because it, you know, first off, there's no color in the app now aside from photos. And for some reason, they have like a rainbow colored, you know, thing, app icon.
What cracks me up is in the press release, you know, they're like, you know, they're basically like, it's the same logo with a modern twist. And I was like, okay, they use the word familiar. And I said, if by familiar, you mean both of these logos kind of look like a camera. Sure. And they said, yeah. And the colors are still there. The same colors are still there. They're not. They're not the same colors at all. They're completely different.
Totally different.
They went
yeah.
from primary colors to this like Microsoft
it's
Word
like purple
art
and stuff.
Gradient.
Jeez, yeah, that's exactly what it looks like. It looks like the like weird like word art colors, like the rainbow gradients.
Yeah.
The first time I posted an Instagram after the update, I had to like double take my phone. So I got like a little like notification. I'm like, what is that? I couldn't like read the text.
Yeah.
I was like, did I like download some app? I looked at it. I was just like, so-and-so liked your photo. I was like, oh God, that's going to take some getting used to.
If you open up the app and you look at the bottom, like at the camera thing where you go to post a photo, they have a different camera icon.
Oh jeez. Yeah, you're right.
why don't they just use the same one in both places? It's weird. I don't know, man.
Yeah, that's really strange.
At the end of the day, who cares? We're all going to get used to it in like a month and nobody's going to mind.
Yeah, it's exactly like when Twitter changed the bird. Remember that? Like Twitter used to have like the fat kind of different looking bird and now they like made it skinny.
Yeah.
It's the same exact thing.
Or Pikachu. Nobody noticed that Pikachu got a lot skinnier over time.
Pikachu got skinny too, right? Over like 20 years.
All right, man. Let's wrap this up. Let's do some recommendations. Sure. Music, movies, what are you into right now?
Okay, well, I wrote a couple things down here. Obviously, the Chance album is absurdly good, and you should listen to it. I listened to this album. It's the band's called Camp Cope.
Okay.
The album's self-titled. I think it's been getting a lot of like attention right now, kind of in the emo world. But it's short. It's 8 tracks, and it's very catchy. It kind of reminds me a little bit of the band MacTavishkan, which is like a European run-for-cover band. I know that's, you know, very much so a niche recommended if you like, but you know, it's good. Modern Baseball album, Holy Ghost, just came out last week and I very much so love that after not really liking, You're Gonna Miss It All. So I'm very excited about that right now. That's probably going to be high on my end of the year list. I saw you recommended Pine Grove. I'll second that before you get the chance to say it. I saw them last week with Modern Baseball actually in Asbury Park, and they are so good live. Like, I wasn't expecting them to be like nearly that tight, so I loved that. And I saw Captain America Civil War twice last week, and it was phenomenal. I liked it more the second time, so definitely go see that.
Nice. Awesome. Well, I definitely agree with you on the coloring book recommendation. You just listen to it. It's a great record. If you're not into hip-hop, forgive that for a little bit and check this record out. It's really great. James Blake put out a new one. I always really vibe out to his stuff, especially during the summertime. It's just good to, kind of put on while you're going for a walk or something like that. I got Pine Groved hard. I was a couple months late to the game, but it hit me pretty heavy. So I've been really thinking about that record a lot. I wrote something about that on my blog, and I'll link that here. Roy English, former singer of Ayahuasca, put out a new single. It's three tracks. Two of them were released as a demo a year or two ago. He's been kind of quiet. I know he's creating all the time, but he hasn't really been releasing a whole lot. And when he does, he kind of pulls it down. So go check out I'm Not Here Part One. It's everywhere you listen to music. Check that out while it's still available. As far as movies go, I haven't really been watching a whole lot, but I did see Chef on Netflix. And I know a lot of our Under the Gun friends have been pushing that movie pretty hard for the past year or two. So check that one out. It's really good. Kind of family movie. It's pretty cute. So
that's awesome. Yeah. I never know what to check out as far as what everyone under the gun says, because I feel like Sam Cohen and Brian argue so much about what's good and what's bad that I never everything just seems bad to me. So,
well, that's the problem when all your friends are critics.
Exactly. Yeah, they just disagree with everything, and I don't see any movies.
Yeah, that's kind of why I stopped reading reviews. Like, if somebody really really likes something, they'll tell me about it on their own. I don't need to read a review and like tell me about all the bad stuff. I want to hear what's actually good. I don't want to waste time listening to or reading about any of the stuff that's not too hot. So that's why I like good recommendations, not like this track sucked.
Yeah.
All right, John, thanks so much for being on the show. This is the pilot, so who knows if this will even air, but I really really appreciate you helping me shake all these feathers and get this bird flying.
Yeah, no problem. I really enjoyed doing this. This is awesome.
Yeah. I'm sure we'll have you back on pretty soon. If this one doesn't go out, you'll probably be one of the first guests, and we'll get that out there.
Great.
Yeah, in the meantime, it's been the show. If you like what we're doing, check out Under the Gun on Facebook and on Twitter. I'm sure we'll have podcast handles, and I'll have to punch those in later. I still have no idea what we're going to name this thing.